podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
This is A View from the Bridge, official podcast of the Belfast Giants for kingdomofthegiants.com. Today's Wednesday, the 31st of October. It's Halloween. My name is Patrick Smith. What a weekend for the Belfast Giants. A real battle, a short bench side, 4 points from two overtime victories. We are going to talk all about that in a second. We're also going to hear from Adam Keith. We're going to be chatting and asking your TFA questions to Blair Riley. And ahead of this weekend's 3-3 in Scotland, we'll be catching up with an old mate in Omar Pasha. But speaking of which, we talked about, you know, people being on the bench and how we were going to sideline people. You know, one of the guys, one of the pundits every week. Last week, Joel was on the sideline. This week, Joel's on the sideline because he's too busy down at Westminster hobnobbing with MPs. Davey McGimsey, how are you?
I'm okay, Paddy. I got to admit, it was a very long week. I didn't take my benching kindly, but you know, we get on with it. And
you worked hard.
Dug deep, and I've actually sent a squad down to London. And, Joel's currently. I've just got Sammy Wilson talking the ears off him, so Joel's had to stay in London, and it's me and Sez again this week.
Yeah, Mr. Kitchen, how are you?
I'm very well, gentlemen. Thank you very much indeed.
We're going to get cracking, and let's start by talking about the game at the Drizzle Dome on Saturday night. Faced off a little bit later. It was due to face off at 7. I think it must have faced off about, 20 past 7 after the remembrance ceremony that took place beforehand. But when it did, the Manchester Storm were defeated in overtime by the Belfast Giants 4-3. The scoring, well, Luke Moffat opened the scoring pretty early, only 1 minute and 4 seconds into the game. Now, that's not to say there wasn't anything after that, because there's quite a bit of incident through the game. But Blair Riley, who we'll be talking to later, was able to pull it to 1-1. And on 15 minutes into the first period, Darcy Murphy, he was able to make it.
It's a 2-1 game. We're playing great.
Yeah. Giants leading 2-1 at the end of the first. Into the second period, on the power play, Kyle Bond makes it 3-1 before Mike Hammond threads the eye of the needle in between pad and post and Beskarowani and makes it 3-2. An absolute stonker of a shot. We'll talk about that in a second. Chris Ogier, with just under 4 minutes left, was able to make it 3-3, possibly against the run of play. And that forced overtime. And the Giants were pretty much dominant in overtime. And it was David Rutherford with a lovely finish past Matt Ginn to make it 4-3. In goals, they said, Matt Ginn got the loss. 52 saves off 56 shots. The other side, Tyler Beskarowani with the win. 26 saves off 29 shots. Your referees of the night, and I know we're going to discuss this, are Dean Smith and Matt Rose. Let's talk about the result before we come on to the major incidents. Says, I'll start with you. The Giants were ended up a bit short benched, not only starting the game without the likes of Van der Meer, Dwyer, Shields, no Matt Toad, no Mark Garside, no Andrew Dixon, you know. They actually going into what is a small, tight rink, tight ice, place that over the last couple of years we've had quite a bit of difficulty and had a real battle on our hands in this game.
Yeah. I was up at practice last week and Adam was doing a lot of drills, concentrating on literally compactness, if that's a word. You know, literally putting everything down. I know it's we skate on an Olympic-sized rink and it's slightly smaller in Manchester. And are you allowed to say Manchester now? neutral gender, Chester.
I'll drain him.
Drizzle Dome. I think a Drizzle Dome is probably too nice a title for it. But anyway, the pad itself, you know, when you're playing used to playing on such a big surface, and you have to come inside a little bit more. And obviously, you know, Manchester have big, big bodies in that lineup as well, which we will talk about very shortly. Mm-hmm. But, you know, watching Adam prepare and putting the detail into it and letting, you know, getting everybody up and ready for it and going in there and picking up those 2 points was pretty impressive. It's going to be – every team's going to have hassles in there this year. You know, good refereeing is essential. We'll come back to that. But
there's a lot to come back to in this.
There certainly is. But especially coming in short benched, you know, you're missing Colin Shields, you're missing Patrick Dwyer, Jim Vandermeer, Mark Garsay. Coey still hasn't got going yet this season. And obviously, you know, Dicko has been a healthy scratch. But missing those bodies is all. Any team in the league would miss every single one of those guys, every one of them. And then losing Frankie and Furley in the first period.
Yep.
On top of that, you've got Riles, who's basically got sitting for 17 minutes. You've got Curtis Leonard, who's sitting for 17 minutes. And at one stage, we were down to 4D and 7 forwards. That's what we were down to. Guys sitting in the penalty box. Guys leaving the ice and obviously having to get treatment for injuries. And to come out with those 2 points from that battle in Altrincham was probably the most impressive game that they've had this season to date, because the next night, we'll come back to. But, you know, big goal from Riley to get us off and running. Obviously, they scored very early. What a move from Darcy Murphy behind the net, banking off the back of the net to get a touch of it, throwing it right through the crease and rises an empty net to basically tie things up. And then Murphy scoring the go-ahead goal to lead at the end of the first period. 2-1.
It's a 2-1 game. We're playing great.
And, you know, 2-1 leading into the next goal with Bonner scoring the power play. And I thought we were in good shape. And then again, Manchester coming back. They ended up tying things up with a few minutes to go. And Rudy with an absolute wonder goal, top shelf, to win it in overtime as well. So, overall, I thought we thoroughly deserved it. I actually thought we dominated with even have such a short bench. You know, I think, wasn't it 56, you said? 56 shots against 29, Paddy?
Yep. We did dominate. There's no doubt about that, Sis. I think we actually did dominate that game. And the fact that what frustrated me the most was the fact that they actually did bring it back to 3-3, which I didn't think was warranted.
Do you know what? You're probably in a much better place because we're only watching TV. You know, with the greatest respect, the video coming from Manchester is awful. It's not good enough for what the product you want to basically have on the computer, on the TV, in the living room, whatever it may be. You were there. You're probably in a better place to have a comment about this than Davey and I are. But you know, the whole game, it was a really good game to watch. You know, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I liked the rough stuff. But coming back to the first incident with Bars, do you want to talk about that, or do you want
to?
I'm going to
move it over to Davey here, just let him have his say, because and we can move on to that, Davey, if you'd like, because in that first period, and as I said, it actually was an entertaining game. There was a little bit of old school hockey to it. There was a gripe between it. There was a real edge to it, and you know, the Giants were pretty impressive.
Yeah, getting out to that you know, conceding the goal in the first sort of 65 seconds isn't ideal. You're up against. And they go in that little barn. Simon spoke about how compact you have to be, and you know, coughing the goal up is not ideal. The way we came back and we took complete control of the game, I know we had 59 shots on target or something. There are 73 shots off the course of the evening, all on off block, thanks to the stat guys there for getting me those stats before the podcast. You know, we were in pretty much control of the game. Disappointing to cough up the goal right, you know, with 3 minutes or something left in the game. We just couldn't relieve the pressure there. They kept coming and kept coming. So, you know, credit to them as well in one respect, that they fought to get back into the game. But that goal in overtime, it's a thing of the move Rochie pulls behind the net, and then the outlet pass, sort of going three-line pass, and really just going in
just
and smashing
free.
Set it free. I think we'll have that to tweet up. I'm not sure whether they've got the highlights out there or not yet, but we have that. We can tweet it up after the podcast. But yeah, it showed it was good character win. You know, from going behind and getting back into it and leading to getting pegged back and then coming away in the 3-on-3 overtime. You have to call it 3-on-3 overtime.
That's it. It's trademark. It's contracted to call it that.
And Adam Keefe as a coach too in overtime, which, you know, notoriously as an organization, we are statistically pretty poor in overtime over the years. But Adam Keefe 4-2 on Saturday, obviously then moving on to Sunday, making it 5-2, another overtime win, which we'll come on to. But, you know, if you would take the hit on Frankie.
Yes, it's Dave Myers.
For me, it's a hit. He doesn't unnecessary hit. Frankie element of responsibility coming around behind the net, his head up, but he has leveled him blindside, and you know that's a game penalty all day long. He should be going home, you know, going and getting the first use of the hot water there. But it's one of those, and then things, and then you've other bad hits that come. We'll talk to the captain later on, you know, and other things happen around the game then, and fights happen and other bad hits happen because those things aren't stamped down on quick enough. For me, that is a really, it's a suspensionable hit. Why is it not being pulled up by Dobbs? Well, you know, Simon phoned me on Saturday night and asked me could get this clip cut, and just the footage just is, it's like something your Uncle Jimmy would record at a family wedding, you know, with his big orange camcorder from 1988. It's really, really poor quality footage. It's grainy. It's VHS quality, you know. I think there'd be something done by Michael Hicks going forward that, you know, there has to be a certain level of footage required.
Yeah.
Because if it's about player safety, then you have to have the footage to re-educate players as well. This is what you can't do. They can't do anything with that hit. They can't cut the 10 seconds of footage that I haven't seen it to anybody and go, you don't want to be doing this. This is a classic case of what not to do because the footage is that poor. But it's still, for me, principal point of contact, shoulder to head, and it's a dangerous hit. Should have been suspension.
100%, I think it should have been a suspension. And then later on in the game, as was mentioned, Kieran Long goes high on Jonathan Ferland and he's on the ice. Now, there's two parts to this, it's not just the hit. The footage is, again, not great. It sort of happens behind the play. You can just see it in the corner, but it's not conclusive. It leaves fairly prone on the ice. And then we come to the reffing side of it because Long goes at it with, who did he end up?
Curtis Leonard
feeds him his dinner, drags him back up off the ice, back onto his feet, and continues. But Dean Smith, instead of leaving that to his linesman, just stands beside Ferland and watches.
I think that's an absolute disgrace. As an official, his priority is to make sure that those players are safe. You know what? I know the camera wasn't very good. The camera work. Not that, actually, I don't want to criticize the cameraman. He's only using the tools that he has. So, but the quality of the officiating, on that play alone was absolutely dire, and it needs to be better. This league has, you know, it has improved in every aspect over the last few years, and that includes the officiating. You've got to give him credit. You know, Hicksy's been right in the middle of it for, you know, officiating for the last, I don't know, 15, 20 years. And he stepped up to director of hockey operations for the league. And from all intents and purposes, from what I'm hearing from, you know, different guys in the organization, he's doing a very, very good job. But that play alone and what he didn't do, and Dean Smith in this situation, and did not attend to a player who looks to me as if he's out cold on the ice and not doing anything about it as an official, that shows an absolute lack of professionalism, and he needs to be reprimanded for that, in my opinion. I don't think what he did on that play itself, if he's supposed to be paying attention to the safety of the players, not even calling. Now, yes, it's difficult, not because the teams don't travel with a physio. It's usually Taft comes on to make sure if he can do anything. Yes, I'm led to believe that there's supposed to be a doctor for the home team in the rink that's playing on the night. I know the Giants always have one. But Furley was out cold, and Dean Smith basically ignored him. And that is not good enough. It's not good enough.
Dave, you were going to come in there or something?
I was, look, on the Furley hit, I've seen enough of it to make a judgment. We've obviously have the benefit of the slow motion replays and the frame by frame sort of thing. He dumps the puck, and as he turns, he's hit, and he's obviously hit high because he's sparked. appears to be anyway, lying prone on the ice, looks out cold, which we'd say he's either been hit in the head or his head has hit the ice. One of the two, it's inconclusive because it spins away. You see the initial impact, you don't see the follow-up. I spoke to our referee over the weekend about and a few players about unnecessary hits. You know, there. I suppose there isn't really a rule within the game about, you know, there's rules about late hits and boards and all this kind of things and where in the body you can hit, but actually making a hit that doesn't, one, separate a player from the puck, or two, stop a player's ability of getting back into the play. So, you know, for me, there's only a few reasons to actually make a hit. And as I say, one of them is to separate the player from the puck so your team can get it, or stop that player, you know, making a play and getting back in. You know, so does he need to hit Jonathan for? No, because it doesn't affect the game other than laying him out. There's a responsibility there on Jonathan Fernand to protect himself as he spins back into centre ice, that he knows where the players come from. But the responsibility for me, in a much larger percentage, is with the other player, just not to make that hit. He can avoid the hit, he can avoid contact, because it doesn't add anything or take anything away from the game to let Jonathan Fernand spin off for a line change. Which is where he's heading, and he looks out cold in the ice. Dean Smith, to me, you've seen the footage, it's on Manchester Storm TV, he skates over, has a look, kind of rolls his eyes, skates backwards. I don't know at that stage, should the referee be frantically blowing his whistle and waving the trainer on, the player that looks unconscious on the ice? Should he be down checking that there's a whole raft of things that you're trained in first response, first aid, to somebody. If you came across somebody in the street like that, you would get help. So I'm with Simon that there needs to be a bit of re-education there around what referees or what linesmen need to do. Okay, there's an altercation going on 6 feet away, but you know, for me, the first protocol has to be the safety of the player who's prone on the ice.
There are three other officials in that respect. You know what I mean?
I'll let Simon Kitchen have a say here, because to get tucked in to what he sees as poor things. But the point about saying Dean Smith this, Dean Smith that, Dean Smith is part of a four-man team, yep, part of a two-man refereeing team. And I think it was Matt Rose to hold his hands up as well, as the, you know, he's 50% of what's going on there. Did either of them get the hit? And no. Did either of them follow up with good you know, support of the player who's out cold?
No, there was another case just before you just the Ferland hit, actually, and the way he was prone on the ice reminded me of, I think we were up against the Phoenix at that same venue. Shane Johnson takes a hit behind the goal at the away end as well, and he's face down. It's Matt Thompson was the referee at that point, and Johnny was left prone, face down on the ice, and the play continued. There was no whistle, and Johnny ended up out of the game, and I think he was out for another couple of weeks after that. And, you know, it's incidents like that that the referee has to be wise to. Now, okay, in that case, Matt Thompson was the only referee. He had two other linesmen. It is a four-man team in this respect. Coming back to the refs is the other thing that were frustrated, not just me in the stands, but a couple of ones around us, was both in OT and in the third period, there were two instances when the hand goes up on Dean Smith, and we saw it. There was no whistle, game continued, there was no penalty, and we ended up having to take the piss, because, you know, if you're going to stick your hand up, you got to call a penalty.
The bottom line is, he's lost his balls. That's all it is. He puts his hand up, he knew exactly what he was calling, because the incident happened right in front of Lynette when Kyle Bond had contact with their goaltender. There was no call on the play. Dean Smith was fully in view for the camera. Then the defenseman comes in, gives Bonner a bit of a shove. Bonner's back on his feet. Well, he sort of stumbled back on his feet. Their number nine comes in, puts the glove right into his face. Dean Smith puts his hand up. Straight away.
Yep.
He's absolutely in full view of the camera. Everybody was watching the webcast seeing it. Everybody. And then when the play develops, he even takes the bloody face off outside.
That was the most frustrating part of it. I was going absolutely bonkers, because it was frozen down. The players frozen down. And the Storm players were in the ear of Smith. He bottled it and he pushes the face off outside. 100%. And there's no reason for it.
Absolutely 100% right, Paddy. You were there, as I say, but we've seen everything. The cameraman has a perfect view of it. He watches the guy, the referee, put his hand up. And just going back to what Davey said about Matt Rose being 50% of it, to be honest, you've got to give Dean Smith a lot of credit, because to me, Matt Rose didn't do anything in that game. I don't think he called a bloody penalty. I don't think he was responsible for one of those penalties at all. Dean Smith, again, putting his you know, getting stuck into the middle of it, that's fair enough. But see, when you put your hand up, have the balls and have the, you know, the professionalism to call the penalty that you're going to call. See, if you're taking two players off, go ahead and take two players off. It was a blatant penalty, and he lost his balls. Then it goes on to the next one. I can't even remember what it was because it was that off. But
the charging call just at the end of the period.
That's correct. So literally, the penalty Ballmer. Again. Ballmer. As blatant as you want. I don't know how more, you know, prominent you want it to be. He puts his hand up. Everybody can see it. And then he doesn't call that again. So that's two power plays the chance of lost out on. Don't get us started on the instigation rule, because we'll be here all bloody night on
it
that.
It was called quite a bit in that game.
You know, what about Blair Riley's head? That's one of the best hits we've seen all season.
This is the frustrating part of that whole game, is the fact that there are so many isolated incidents in one game that when you boil it down, you think, you know, the Giants still dominated. The Giants still put 50-odd shots on Ginn, 70-odd shots overall, as Davey said, and restricted the shots on Beskarovani. However, when we ended up with two players out of the game, not just that night, but the following night, and there's no retribution, not just from the referee, but also subsequently from the Department of Player Safety, it leaves you frustrated. It leaves you thinking, you know, what do we have to do? Manchester in itself played that sort of edgy game, played that sort of some would say dirty game that works for them in that ice, and also they try to play it, we'll talk about later, in the game against Guildford Flames the following night. But, you know, the Giants know that. But you expect the referee to offer some form of player safety, some form of retribution that we didn't get that night, which is more frustrating than anything. Now, I want to take it back to the Giants themselves before we move on to the Nottingham Panthers game. But, you know, going into overtime, I was coiled up like a spring. Yeah, I know that my friend Alex was next to me. I know Simon Harris, who was doing the commentary for Manchester Storm TV, was laughing because I was going absolutely ape over more or less every single move that took place in 3-on-3 overtime. As you are when you're caught up in the game like that. One player I want to single out. Tyler Beskarovani was great, as the other one. But one player I want to single out, Davey, for that game is a player seemed to be ever present on the ice, and that's Josh Roach.
He's had a great weekend there, but he's had 2-3 weeks now, you know, probably more to be fair. He's shouldering a lot of burden in regards to ice time. He's a guy who came in and he played D from day one, but, you know, could easily play forward if he needed to. He carries the puck really well. That outlet pass I talked about earlier on, you know, he sees the ice very well, I suppose. Coming from North America, where they would play on a rink more akin to the size of Manchester, maybe, you know, the speed of the game suits him a little bit better than the speed of the game on the Olympic rink, where he's still learning his trade on the 200-foot ice. So, you know, numbers don't tell you everything. You look, he's an assist on each of the first three goals for the Belfast Giants there. What am I looking at?
The next night.
That's the next night.
Read yourself back, anyway.
No, I'm looking, sorry. He's a plus on the three. He's on the ice for the first three goals. I'm looking at plus minus here, sorry, rather than the points. So, you know, but that sort of goes along with what you're saying there about the quality of ice time. Simon, fair to say, close on 40 minutes?
I would say, well, out of the 65, I would say he's pushing 40 minutes, absolutely. Easily.
He seemed to be always on the ice.
And he was brilliant.
Yeah.
He was absolutely brilliant.
You know, and it's great to see him doing well. Starting to settle in, really, really in the straps now. And big season come up for Josh Roach here, I feel.
Absolutely. Right, let's move it on to the Nottingham Panthers game. If you want to get the highlights of this game, they're usually up from Storm TV. As of right now, of us recording, they're not up yet. I don't know why, but I'm sure they will be. And when they are, we'll give you the information at AVFTB on Twitter. We move on.
Paddy, can I just say something before we do move
very
on?
Very quickly.
Very quickly. I think Dobbs would have had a really... I mean, I know there's nothing being... Pardon that game, but I don't think Dobbs would have been in a position to do anything about it because the quality of the feed was crap.
Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Sunday. We were up against it. as I said, I already listed the players that were out of the game on Saturday. And then we also have now lost Beauvillier and Ferland for the game at the NIC against the Nottingham Panthers. The Panthers side, who the previous night had held a lead against the Sheffield Steelers right up until the final minutes before losing in overtime. And in this game, they held a 2-0 lead before losing in overtime. Brett Perlini opened the scoring in the first period on the power play before Dylan Olsen doubled it up in the second on a feed from Mark Hurtubise. 2-0 to the Nottingham Panthers going into the final period. And then the Giants, well, the Panthers run into a bit of a penalty problem. Tyler Biggs gets called for hooking, and soon after, Luke Pither gets called for hooking what looks more like a trip, but gets called for hooking. In that subsequent 5-on-3, Darcy Murphy makes it. Darcy Murphy makes it.
It's a 2-1 game.
Yes.
We're playing great.
Yes. And then soon afterwards, when it goes back to 5-on-4, Dustin Johnner levels it at 2-2, and we are back into overtime. And then an interesting overtime. The Panthers don't really have that many opportunities. And then Robert Farmer decides to take a speculative shot from the point, and it rebounds off Josh Roach, the man who's just been talking about. He goes flying up the ice, more or less clear, takes a shot at Michael Garnett from the Nottingham Panthers net, tries to chase him down the ice and leaves his cage wide open. Roach goes around him, takes the shot, hits the post. You can tell I'm getting excited. Hits the post, comes to Darcy Murphy, and Murphy finishes proceedings 3-2. Guards to goal, we talked about Garnett, 24 saves on 27 shots. And the other side, Tyler Bescaroni, 26 saves on 28 shots. Your referees on that night,
Hogarth and Dalton.
Stephen Hogarth and Dandy Alton. Davey, start with you. The Giants were up against it, 14 skaters, partly 14 skaters for the guts of 5 periods and 2 overtimes, but 14 skaters at the NIC, 2-0 down, and show that character to come back and take the win.
Yeah, it was just kind of a case of hanging in there. It's a place disappointing, I'll guess, for Kiefer. Penalty kill has been pretty good this season. I think Guildford, maybe aside, we've been pretty strong on the PK. Coming back into it ourselves with 2 power plays of our own and just hanging in there, really, with 2-0 down, you think, oh dear, this could be a long night, you know, after 25 minutes, right through the end of the second period there. You're coming out at the end of the second period. I guess that in that second period break, Adam Keith's just saying, well, lads, this is where we're at. We're 2 goals behind. We've got the boys, we've got a bit of adrenaline flowing here. Let's see what we can go. Let's go and get the next goal and see what happens. And of course, we've managed to come out there and get 2 very, very quick goals. And all of a sudden, the momentum goes the other way and you've got a bit of energy. And then you take it into 3-on-3 overtime. And as I said earlier on, you know, Kiefer and his reign as coach now goes to 5-2. We're a pretty good 3-on-3 team. We've proved that over even the possession that we'll have during those 3-on-3 mm-hmm. periods. Which surprised me, the shot that Farmer takes, because it is that there is no lane there. He could probably dump it in there and hope one of his teammates get it. But the risk you're taking there, just having a blast, is that anything can happen. And it's came off Roachers. And the speed that he's showing there, just to get up after the puck. Garnett makes the Dominic Hasek decision to come out there and, you know, doesn't get the puck. And as I said on Twitter last night, the vision that Roachie shows to play it off a post there for Darcy Murphy, coming down the left wing to absolutely rip it into the back of the net. There's no such thing as a bad win. And there's no such thing as a bad win in the NIC. And to come away the top out of 4-point weekend, I seen Mark Finn saying, oh, you won with 14, we had only 12 players. Well, good for you. You know, we were up against it. We've lost 2 of our main players before the game, the night before the injury, when we're away on the road, you know. So they set up to go with 12 men and Murdy and Nets. But, you know, we're a bit of adversity. 6,000 people, probably, 5,900. It's one of those, done really, really well. Boys are to come away 2 points in the NIC on the 16th anniversary of the of that famous night in Belfast. And so you know, is it too early to crack out the never forgive, never forget, Paddy?
Never at all. Mark Finn coming out with a my daddy's better than your daddy comment. That surprises me from that keyboard warrior. Says the mantra seems to be, and we hear it over and over from the likes of from Kiefer, is you've got to find a way, and the Giants had to find a way, and they found a way.
No excuses. He's saying it all the time. You know, down on bodies. Obviously, we were waiting on the news coming through from the night before if there was going to be suspensions. Blair Rennie could have been suspended, so it would have been even 13 players as well. So going into NIC is never easy, as Davey says. But to come out, lad, from 2 points, you know, we were all sitting watching the retweets from Twitter coming in, and I was keeping an eye on flash scores, and we were on our WhatsApp group, we're updating, it was 2-0 down. You know, I think, right, okay, we know it's just a matter of trying to, you know, get through here the rest of the game healthy. And then the third period starts, you know, we get a goal through Darcy Murphy. I tweeted onto the group, and you two both come back, yeah, yes. And then it's 2-2. Davey comes back with a wow. And, you know, we're basically tying things up, getting to the third. I watched the game back. Early hours of Monday. I woke up at 4:30 Monday morning. Wasn't specifically for this, believe you me, but I ended up watching the game back. And do you know what? I thought we were great. I thought we were really, really good. We did look a bit leggy in the first period. Totally understandable. You know, it was a tough game the night before, but as the game went on, we just seemed to get stronger and stronger. And when we went 2-2 with 7 minutes to go in the game, I remember sending out the message on the WhatsApp to say, we get the overtime, we're going to win this. And that's exactly what happened. I'm not saying I've got a magic crystal ball, but, you know, Roche was brilliant again. I know you don't get to see him very often, Paddy, and obviously you got to see him live on Saturday night, awesome. And you were wax lyrical about him. But, you know, coming out, and again, how many minutes did he play on Sunday? He must have played at least another 37 to 38 minutes on Sunday as well. I noticed that he had actually ended up taking a penalty. Maybe he took two penalties. And I think he probably took two penalties to get a rest, because every time he went to the bench, Kiefer was going, what are you doing here? Get back out there. So, you know, it's you sort of sometimes you have to do that. But to come out of there 2-0 down, win the game 3-2, two overtime games at the weekend, coming out with 4 points on the road. I thought it was an outstanding effort from every single one of those guys in Teal or White.
Davey, 3 power play goals on the weekend. You're saying about the 3-on-3. It was an interesting point, the fact that we do so much possession. But you see that as well on the power play. You see that when we've got that sort of space to play, that we are very quick to cycle the puck and to use it.
Look, over the last Belfast Giants, what is our identity? I said the question's been asked many times. I remember that, you know, famous Todd Kelman Kirsch video at the start of the season where he says kick ass hockey is back in Belfast. No, it was anything but it. But you know, that didn't work. We talked about, you know, the blue collar type of game that the Belfast Giants play, the physical game that Blair Riley talks about. You know, you do the physical things first. That's a lot of the things that Belfast Giants fans want to see, because that's what we've been brought up on. But over the last number of years, especially since Dortchess came back into the organisation, and I suppose teams often sort of reflect what their coaches and their managers, you know, what their style of play was. And we've got that high skilled, high speed puck possession as well. You know, we're a good team when we've got the puck, but we're also a good team getting the puck back at the minute. You know, we're going in hard in the forecheck, but and we're very, very aggressive on the penalty kill. And sometimes that can be a good thing when you come up against a very, very good power play. Being really aggressive on the penalty kill doesn't always work out for you. But, you know, disappointing coughing those two goals up, as we've said, on the power play. But our own power play, the movement in it at the minute is good. I just don't. I've closed my phone there. I don't have the actual power play shots that went on the night in front of me there. But, you know, I know that there was real good possession and a lot of good shots reined in on the power play.
Right, well, we'll wrap it up on regards to the weekend's games. That's a 4-point weekend for the Belfast Giants. 2 overtime wins, a fabulous return on this road stretch so far. Only 1 game, only 2 points dropped, and that was at the Guildford Flames the other week. We covered that. We go in to 3 games and 3 nights, but we'll talk about that later. Before we come on to the interview, we've got one interview, it's with Adam Keefe. Before we come on to that, let's have a quick word about our sponsor. Actually, I'm going to go reach down here, and I'm going to lift up what is a lovely Garden Brewery Pale Ale from our friends at Beer 52. Let's see, it's all in action about the sound. You can support us here at Views in the Bridge by supporting our sponsors. Beer52.com are the UK's number one craft beer delivery service. You can get different beers every single month. This month, it is the beers from the Balkans, beers from Sofia, from Zagreb, from Athens, some very, very lovely stuff. This one here appears to be from Croatia. It says so on the side, and it's very nice. It's the Garden Brewery Pale Ale. If you want to get involved with that, you can go to beer52.com/AVFTB, and the first box is free. And thanks to our friends at beer52.com for supporting the podcast, and thank you for supporting them and therefore supporting us. Right, interviews. Simon popped down to Steve. Actually, Stephen Murphy's question on hockey last night says, or do I call you John Candy? How was that?
It was brilliant, crack. It was a real good fun. There was over 120 in to support Stephen in his first event, first testimonial. And you know what? He absolutely deserves every bit of support that everyone can give him this year. You know, what a goal he's been for us in the 10 seasons, about 9 seasons getting into his 10, that he's been there. And it was a great night, you know. We did the, you've just touched on John Candy. I was that man for a few minutes, and the boys put on their Jamaican bobsled team. It was hilarious. There's a video. Did I send you the video? No.
No, no.
I'll send you the video. It's funny. And then, you know, Ron Burgundy was there, a.k.a. Tyler Beskarwani. Conor McGregor was there, a.k.a. Jonathan Boxall. It was...
That was a good one. I saw that picture. That was an excellent one.
It was brilliant. Two pigeons turned up. There was a chicken. There was Bob Ross, the painter, was there. You know, there's so many guys. Everybody was in dress. Three by mice, Darcy Murphy, Curtis Leonard, and Kevin Rain. You know, it was a really, really good event. And Team North America won handsomely in the end, actually. But really good job. Looking forward to the next event that he has planned.
Yeah, we'll get Stephen Murphy on pretty soon to talk about this season, talk about his testimony, he'll talk about his 10 years with the Belfast Giants. But let's move on with the show. And at that at last night's question of hockey, Simon got the chat with the head coach, Adam Keefe.
Adam, we'll touch on the winning performance tonight for the Team North America over Team GB and the Stephen Murphy question of hockey. You certainly played your part in that.
Important to say that. Besko and the rest of the crew there, they were answering all the questions. So I'm too busy worried about our own team.
Talking about our own team, 4-point weekend. Low on bodies going into Manchester, losing two guys in the first period really did put you up, you know, against the wall to a certain extent. But coming out and getting the overtime winner with David Rutherford's overtime goal, you must have felt good on Saturday evening.
Yeah, I think sometimes when you're tested, you know, a bit of adversity, and we went through it last season as well, and I thought the guys handled it well last year. And this year, you know, there's always going to be times when we face adversity, and, you know, we just went through a bit of it, and it was nice to see the guys respond and find a way.
Party on, man. Last night, Nottingham Panthers, it's always good to win the Nottingham and get the win. But going 2-0 down with the short bodies, was there any panic in the room, or you just knew that you had to trust in what you were doing?
No, I mean, we actually were quite happy getting out of the first period, going down 1-0. I thought it could have been a lot worse. You know, take over that period, 1-0 down, you know you're still in the game. And then even after the second period, I thought we had a much better second period, but still we weren't great. And then we come out of that and it's only 2-0 down. And, you know, we wanted to make sure that we tied the special teams in a game like that. And they certainly did. They came out clutch with two big power play goals, and all of a sudden we're right back in the game. And I think that from there, you know, the players were extremely tired. Obviously, going down to 8-4s and 4-D in the Manchester took its toll. And you could see that in the first two periods in Nottingham. But I think once we got those power play goals, even just the first one in general, that adrenaline and that real compete level, you've seen it come through in all the players. And I think everybody, to a man, played their part, especially in that third period, and we got the job done.
you went to social media last night after the game, which isn't something you'd normally do, but you obviously felt so positive about the performance from the guys the weekend.
Yeah, and it's never easy going into the NIC and facing the Nottingham Panthers. It doesn't matter if you're at full strength, but to go in there with, you know, three lines and 5D after going down to 8-4 with all the instigators and the 10-minute misconducts that happened in Manchester. Guys had to eat a lot of minutes. So we knew that we were going to be up against it, and it was really nice to see the guys respond. And you know, we talk about it at length. No excuses. It's a game. We got to find a way. And you know, those are some of the words that we use. And the guys certainly did that, so that's why I was super happy with the performance of the weekend.
You just touched on it there with regards to the penalties that were handed out on Saturday evening. Without saying too much, there hasn't been anything from Dops as of when we're doing this interview on Monday evening. Have you been told anything of why there was nothing forthcoming from Dops after that game? Because there was quite a few misconduct penalties and quite a few questionable hits.
Yes, there's no suspensions from that game. I think, you know, not to say that they're, you know, it was too tough. You looked at them yourself, and so did I, and the footage was just not clear or good enough, unfortunately, for Dops to properly view it. And as a result, you can't really suspend them, and you can't really, I guess you go on, at that point we're going on the officials' write-up, and obviously their write-ups did not warrant a suspension.
We'll leave that there. I'm sure we'll have a chat about that on the podcast at some point tomorrow evening. Adam, thank you very much for your time. A brilliant performance the weekend, obviously the 4 points, and moving on to this weekend, which we will speak to later on.
Time for October's Player of the Month, sponsored by Fonacav. We put the nominations out to you to give us who you thought have been the best players of the October period. From that list of nominations, we've drawn up a short list of four, and therefore, the players you get to choose from to be the October Player of the Month are: number 25, Blair Riley; number 34, Tyler Bescarouani; number 77, Josh Roach; and number 83, Dustin Johnner. Voting is now open on our Twitter account, twitter.com/AVFTB. You can also find it on the Kingdom of the Giants website and on facebook.com. Cast your vote. Polls close on Friday, and the winner will be awarded the A View from the Bridge Player of the Month trophy. And thanks to Fonacav for their support. Blair Riley, Tyler Bescarouani, Josh Roach, and Dustin Johnner. Very quickly, lads, who is your choice and why? David McGimsey.
Oh, Paddy, I think this is a straight shootout between two guys, and it's their cigarette paper between them. That's Blair Riley and Tyler Bescarouani. I told Cez we'd have some numbers prep. 10 games through October, and Tyler Bescarouani conceded 16 goals at 1.63 goals per game, which is phenomenal. But, you know, a 9.43 save percentage as well. His numbers, you know, show... Thanks, man.
No, go for it. Keep going.
His numbers back up, you know, our wins. Whatever that is. 9 wins October. But, you know, the old cliche, goals win games, defences, goaltenders win championships. And at this stage, we're just trying to get the goals going. And you know, Blair Riley's came up with, I don't know, 3 or 4 game-winning goals, 3 or 4 MVP performances. You know, he was plus 10 or something over the course of the month. So, you know, through those 10 games. So absolutely phenomenal month from Captain Blair Riley. Where will my vote go? Where will I put my stamp? I think Besco, I think as, you know, Riley himself says, I think Besco will win it more than once this season. So I'll go a fantastic October for Captain Blair Riley.
Simon Kitchen.
Blair Riley for me. You know, it's not so long ago there was people calling for him to be changed, that he wasn't cap material. And you know, again, you know, once you know the facts that concussion, 3 days into the training camp or 2 days into the training camp, missing 3 weeks, more or less a month. You know, we got to talk to him and earlier on, and he said about, you know, it's, you know, he has to get mentally right to come back into it, start taking a few hits and both in training and games, and then you start to feel good about yourself. But what an October he's had. Davies already rhymed off there as, you know, game-winning goals and the everything else he brings to the table. So, and I think he's 100% right. I don't think Besko's going to struggle for getting player of the month this season. He's been different gravy, absolutely different gravy. So, but for this month, for me, it's the captain, Blair Riley.
I'm going to go 3 for 3 from that. I think Blair Riley's been phenomenal these last couple of weeks. And like you say, Tyler Besko-Wanee is going to pick it up at some point. He's been brilliant all the way through. But an honourable mention to the other two nominees, Josh Roach, we spoke of him earlier on, ever present on the ice, coast to coast, doing some hard work, getting some great goals, good setup, man, solid at the back. Dustin Johnner shows exactly what we were missing last season when he was out with that terrible injury for most of the year. You know, he's coming up with some great goals, some great plays, great provider for goals as well. A great player there, but no, I think Blair Riley for me got my vote. And if you want to vote at AVFTB on Twitter, twitter.com/AVFTB, you'll also find it on our Facebook page. And the voting will be open until Friday, and we'll pass on the trophy soon after that.
This is Colin Shields from the Belfast Giants, and you're listening to View from the Bridge, the best podcast in the Elite Ice Hockey League.
Time for the Fan Agenda, brought to you by Belfast Giants TV. This week, we're joined by a man who's on a rich vein of scoring form. And of course, he's also one of the nominees for October's Player of the Month. It's the captain, Blair Riley. How are you, Riles?
Good, fellas. How are we doing?
All going well. How are you feeling after last night's party?
Yeah, a little raspy here. Lost my voice a little bit singing at the Harp, but it was good. There was some quality costumes, that's for sure. Boxy took the cake for sure with the Conor McGregor. It looked like it was spot on, man. I was impressive. He kept it under wraps and unveiled it at the party. It was impressive. He's getting some pretty good love on social media with it.
It's coming off the back. It obviously was a good move. It's coming off the back of what was a great weekend. Two tough battles. I know we spoke on Saturday after the game at Manchester, and that was a battle in itself. But going in shorthanded into Nottingham as well, and going two goals down, but taking the win in overtime, that must give a real boost to the locker room.
Yeah, absolutely. You could see. You know, how excited the group was when they scored that goal. It was, it was kind of a stunning comeback, really. But given the circumstances, down bodies and short bench for two nights, it was an impressive win, no doubt. But, no one feels sorry for you in this league. And teams don't care if you got a full lineup or who's in. You just got to find a way, and that's kind of what Kiefer's been preaching these last little while. So, we dug deep, found a way, and on to the next one.
When you're so short-benched and you're gasping for air and you're trying to fight back in, I know we talked earlier about the mantra of you've got to find a way. How difficult is it? How difficult is it to keep that concentration and fight your way back into you again?
Yeah, it's tough for sure, but it was a quick turnaround to the 4 o'clock game. We didn't really have a whole lot of time to think about things. You just kind of rolled into the arena and you're kind of working off adrenaline, but you could see guys were definitely tired. You could just see it mostly in the decision-making. Guys were making some kind of poor decisions with the puck and stuff, which you tend to see when guys are tired. But I thought for the first 40 minutes, we just kind of hung around and saved our legs. And then you could see we had just enough jump to get through in the last 20 minutes and, a couple of huge power play goals and once you get it to overtime.
Right. Take us back to the start of the season.
With some of the skill guys we have.
Yeah. Take us back to the start of the season, right? So, you come in looking forward, obviously, to training camp. You pick up an injury, the concussion, which knocked you out for 3 weeks. Not knocked you out for 3 or 4 weeks, excuse the pun. But how much of an impact is that on missing the preseason, missing the training camp, and then obviously, you know, trying to get your legs under you for the first couple of weeks when you get back?
Yeah, it was difficult, mainly just because I had a full summer of training this year, as opposed to the year before when I basically lost the whole summer with the back injury. So to have this full summer and kind of feel like I was coming in as good a shape as I'd ever been, and you know, I felt good and I was excited about the season. And first couple of weeks, I felt great on the ice, and you know, I was skating a lot better, and you know, it felt like it was going to be just a good start to the season, which I was really looking forward to. But it takes a toll. It's not a fun injury. I know a couple guys on the team have dealt with it this season and in the past. It's, you know, it can be scary mentally, and it can drain you. But you know, I've dealt with it before, and I kind of knew what the symptoms were, and it's just something that you gotta fully rest and heal and recover from, because it's you know, it's obviously your most important part of your body, so you got to take care of it. So that's what I did, and it took a few weeks to get my feet back under me and kind of get confident again, and you know, getting back to taking hits and realizing that you're 100% again. So yeah, it's not a lot of fun, but it's nice to be over it and healthy again.
Riles, over the sort of middle of September there, we went through a little bit of a barren patch where we couldn't buy a win, and there was a lot of crying out from the fan base about maybe a lack of leadership perceived within the ranks. And then sort of the 1st of October arrives, and as you say, a couple of weeks, more hockey in your legs, and all of a sudden the captain comes to the game. You know, it's quite a remarkable October you've had. A lot of game-winning goals, a lot of MVPs of the game. Is it just getting comfortable in your own with your fitness, as you talk about there?
Yeah, you know, it can take a minute to get confidence back. There's no question about that. When you're doing things the right way, you know, usually for me it tends to be when I'm playing physical first and opening some space up for myself and my line mates. That's usually when you start to find success. But you know, I find that if I'm contributing, you know, in other ways and not necessarily scoring, then you can still have a positive impact on the game. And that's kind of, that's what you have to do when you're struggling offensively. So you can always bring something to the game and impact, you know, one way or another in a positive way to bring the right results for your teammates and stuff. And that's what I tried to do. Like, it's not an easy game, and it's not an easy sport to score all the time, so you got to find other ways to contribute.
You talk about being physical first, leading with that style of play. You know, that's the style we were expecting. Exactly what it says in the tin. You know, when you came in from Stockton, that physical style of play, and let the points come after that. On Saturday night, you're involved in an incident where you've thrown. We've analysed it back and forwards between us and our little groups. We all think an absolutely nice hit, and I think it's Earhart comes in to tackle you on that. What's your feeling that when you go in and you level, what do you feel is a decent enough hit, and the next thing you're having to, you know, sit 10 minutes of the game out?
Yeah, that was kind of a tone for me. I didn't necessarily hate the call just because of the way the game was flowing. Like, it was getting physical, and I thought that the refs probably needed to do that to kind of keep things in control. They maybe could have done it earlier with Byers' hit. That could have been a 5-minute major, and maybe some of that other stuff doesn't happen along the way. But looking back, I think they probably made the right call. So I would have preferred not to sit there for 17 minutes. Don't get me wrong. But, you know, on the flip side, the instigator thing, I know you guys have talked about it quite a bit. Like, I think the hit generally is the instigation in that. And that was the same with the hit on Ferlin. Like, I don't think Leonard instigates that fight. Like, he's sticking up for a teammate in that sense. So, you know, you can go back and forth on that one, but it is to kind of keep control of the game and not get things out of hand. So I understand it.
going to Twitter, a couple of questions. I'll take this one question from Patrick Walsh, who asks, how is the morale and the attitude of the locker room now compared to the first five games of the season?
Significantly improved. You could tell, you know, guys were feeling the pressure a little bit earlier on, and some guys that were new to the league maybe didn't quite grasp, you know, how important wins and losses are, you know, at the start of the season. And, you know, I think that that really surprised some guys that, you know, this is you hit the ground running right off the get-go. And, you know, we settled in, and it's, you know, giving us some time to grow as a team as well. Like, it's tough first month. You're still figuring each other out, and there's a lot of new faces, and guys were getting comfortable with, you know, their spots on the power play and chemistry with line mates and stuff like that. So, you know, there's a lot of growth that goes early on, and you can kind of see us really trending in the right direction now, and we've got to keep building and improving as a team as we go forward.
Right, so you're in your third season in Belfast now. When you come over from North America for your first season there, and, you know, obviously growing into your role, you're the captain now. Do you still set yourself short-term goals with regards to, you know, your play? Do you take it in maybe five-game slots, whether it's points or whether it's, you know, the physical side of play? Because I know, you know, look at it, Adam's really, he puts a lot of attention into blocks and he puts a lot of attention into hits. You know, Davey's our stat man there, and you know, he obviously does all the counting and all for him. But do you set yourselves targets for a personal point of view?
No, I don't actually. But I definitely look back at the previous games and kind of try to notice trends, and, you know, like, especially with the hits and stuff like that, it usually trends the right way if you're impacting the game. Like I said before, if you're doing some of those things, it tends to show if you've been, you know, producing or helping the team. So, you know, it's nice having those things to look at, you know, whether it's a faith off to the centerman, you know, stuff for the PK and the power play percentages, because, you know, there's generally quite a bit of stuff you can take out of those numbers. It's not always 100% accurate to whether you've been playing as well as you think, but generally over time, if you can notice some trends, it usually has a pretty good idea as to what's going on.
Rez, sort of towards the end of the season last year, obviously we had the fantastic success in the Challenge Cup. What does it feel like as a player, as a captain of my great city, to get that cup at centre ice and skate and show it to the Belfast Giants fans? Is that going to be one that'll go down as a career highlight?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, it was a special moment. Like, I usually, when I've been asked about it, I usually go back to the scene at the airport first. That was pretty spectacular. And that was kind of something that we weren't really expecting. We kind of heard before we took off at the airport that there was maybe going to be some people there, but we didn't realize it was going to be that big of a fan reaction, and it was pretty special. But, you know, that moment, of course, was special at home, but grabbing it for the first time in Cardiff, for the fans that traveled there through the snowstorm and stuff, it's something that I'll never forget, and that's something as teammates and stuff that you'll remember long after you play hockey, for sure.
We're going to wrap up, but a couple of questions before I let you go. As first of all, three games and three nights across Scotland now with Fife, Glasgow and Dundee. Coming off a tough weekend, is it a lot of rest this week just going into those games?
Yeah, well, we're off today. We had a good team gathering last night. Of course, Murph had his testimonial quiz, which it seemed like a lot of fans enjoyed, of course, and all the guys were able to show up in costume, so we had some good laughs and had a good team bonding night out, which is, it's all important, you know, it's good for camaraderie and it's good to build that stuff. So today was a rest day, back to work tomorrow, and you know, I would imagine the next couple of days will be fairly light practices just because, you know, we're short bodied and big weekend coming up with some travel. So, yeah, you know, it'll be a lot of rest, a lot of recovery, and just kind of sharpen up a few things on the ice and get right back to it.
One last question I'm going to take from Matthew Patton on Twitter, a bit more lighthearted. He said, third year here, you must have some local foods you can't get back home. What's your top of your list when you come back after a summer break?
We don't have Bujan back home, so that's usually that's usually number one. And then I usually enjoy the Chipco for some goujons. We'd call them chicken tenders back in Canada, but like a good goujon from the Chipco. And yeah,
keeping it healthy, that's what I like to hear.
Yeah maybe that wasn't the answer.
Spot on. Listen, have a hopefully things go well this weekend. Keep up the great scoring form, and thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks a lot, fellas.
Can I jump in? Sorry, guys. Can I jump in?
Yeah, go on.
I know your last couple of the season before last, Alex Foster was always trying to jump in there and support his teammates to go for Player of the Month. Paddy's already said that you're up for Player of the Month along with Beskarwani, Darcy. Oh, sorry, Beskarwani. Who's the other two, Paddy? Dustin Johnner and Josh Roach.
DJ. So
you've got a big opportunity here to promote yourself for that Player of the Month, or do you think one of those other guys deserve it?
Well, I don't know if anyone can see this, but I voted for Besko, but I would take it back if I could because I saw the votes really close, and he's probably going to be up for it. He'll be up for it every month, so he should probably just back up, get out of the way, and he can collect it in December and January, and just let his roommate have this one for a moment. All right, but I'll be reaching out to Foster tomorrow because it's looking tight, and I got to get him on the campaign because he's undefeated. I think he's 2-3-0 when he gets involved.
Oh, he's a top campaign manager when it comes to this.
Yep,
absolutely, no doubt. Well, listen, good luck, mate, and we'll catch up to you soon.
Disappointing result in the end, 4-1 to Belfast. What are your thoughts on that game?
Well, it's a 2-1 hockey game. It's a 2-1 game. It's a 2-1 game. It's a 2-1 hockey game. But still, late in the third period, it's a 2-1 hockey game. 2-1 hockey game. We 2-1 It's a 2-1 game. 2-1 It's a 2-1 game.
Great stuff. Thanks, Doug.
All right. Thanks.
Thanks again to Riles. Around the league, and we're going to go back to a topic we spoke about a little bit earlier on.
Docs.
Yeah, we're going back to the Department of Player Safety because there was quite a significant or quite a hefty, what's the word? Suspension. Let's go for suspensions, just put out earlier today. I was trying to think of something really smart. But it's just not that. Listen, it's this lovely Gardenbury Pale Ale from Beer 52 that's put it out of my head. Anyway, the Department of Player Safety oversaw the incident at the end of the Flames Storm game that took place on Sunday and have handed out some hefty suspensions. Declan Balmer, well, first of all, they've put the blame fully, and they've said it a few times in the determination, 100% at the feet of the Manchester Storm. Subsequently, Declan Balmer, the Storm, has been given a 3-game suspension as the first person in leaving the bench to start the altercation. Dallas Earhart has been given 1 game as third man in. He also was deemed to have left the bench. And Ryan Finnerty, the head coach, has been given a 1-game and £1,000 fine for not controlling his team, and he's now deemed to be a repeat offender. Davey, I'll start with you. You've seen the incident. Your thoughts on how heavy Dops have come down on the Storm?
I'm not sure that they've come that heavy about right. Which is pretty much all I've got to say. The pictures speak for themselves. They lost their run on themselves, and unfortunately,
4-0 down, you see.
Yeah, they're going to try and send the message, and you know they were just looking one way excuse, one way spark to let it all go off, and the spark came. I think it was a bit of something went on with the goaltender, someone in the party, and all of a sudden everybody's involved, and you know, no justification for leaving the bench. First player to leave the bench gets 3 games. Second player to leave the bench to go third man and only gets 1 game. There's a wee bit of a question mark over that decision, but I'll leave that with Dobbs. We always have kind of said that since Dobbs has came along, we'll just try and respect our decision. We'll certainly talk about it, and I'm sure there'll be times when we disagree with it, but at least they're there and they're making decisions. And two nights in a row for our friend Finner, you know, Saturday night against the Giants, he takes a bench binder. I'm not 100% sure what for. I know when he was going off on the 40-minute mark.
He was giving grief.
And he was given like a diving kind of motion.
Don't know who that was at.
I'm not sure what was going on there and why the Manchester Storm used that door for the first time. Yeah. Probably I've ever seen him use that door, while the Belfast Giants sort of had a mill about centre ice waiting for them to get off. It created a flashpoint that didn't need to be there. So Finner's obviously taking a bench penalty on the Saturday night, and obviously then it's just standard that, you know, if there's a fight in the last few minutes of the game that involves an instigator, then the head coach receives an automatic one match ban as well. It's within the rules. It's happened to us, I think, at the time. It happened in, was it Hull or Fife or somewhere it happened, and Rob Stewart actually was the one that ended up he had signed the game sheet, unfortunately for him, but you know, or genius from us, one of the two, but
I think it's the latter, mate.
Yeah. He signs them usually anyway. So it's just one of those, Paddy. I don't have that much to say about it, though. I've managed to flesh it out to 2 minutes.
Says going into that game or going into those suspensions, the Manchester Storm already had the highest level of penalty minutes in the league. They're starting to gain themselves a bit of a reputation here.
I don't think they're starting to. I think it's been there from the start of the season. I mean, yeah, they've got a couple of good players, but otherwise they've just got a bunch of guys who you know, like to try and put bums on seats. It's not working. It doesn't seem to be that many people at the Drizzle Dome on Saturday night. But, you know, the interesting thing for me for this game on Sunday is the same referees that had the hassle on the Saturday night in Manchester, Dean Smith and Matt Rose. And, you know, carrying that forward after, let's be honest, the two of them had a nightmare the night before. I know we're not, you know, there isn't a plethora of officials that you can literally, you know, jump in to cover somebody's backside and maybe can't make a game or get demoted to a certain extent. So, you know, I watched the incident. I did see a tweet that somebody put out saying that Dallas Earhart was on the ice. He did not jump from the bench. Where the camera was, I couldn't see if that was the case or not. And, you know, coming in there trying to pull somebody out of a scrum and gets the third man in. But, like, again, Manchester haven't impressed me so far this year. Yeah, they'll win games. Yeah, they'll get they'll get a few points and stuff like that. But they've left a lot to be desired. I think they're a team that, as I say, is based on trying to get people into the arena to rough things up with. But hopefully we'll have a full roster the next time they come in for a doubleheader in December, because there's a few scores need to be settled in that thing.
I think that's absolutely true. Right, a couple of personnel changes. There are three involving the Sheffield Steelers. We'll come down a second ago. Start with Sam Duggan. After 4 seasons playing in Sweden Junior and then starting a season with the Jamestown Rebels in the NAHL, he's actually been picked up, says, by Cardiff.
Yeah, you know, young British player. To be honest, I think Cardiff might have signed him without or with the prospect of making sure nobody else got him.
Yeah.
Promise him a nice time. And, you know, they're stacked. Let's be honest. You know, Cardiff have been really impressive this year so far. The Belfast Giants have the weekend after next, I think, is the first game we're going to Cardiff. So it's they're going to be good. I said it last week. Whoever finishes above Cardiff will win the league. I think that's a fair enough comment. They've shown they're the best team in the last 2 seasons, and they're showing that they're showing that they're also beatable. You know, we've had success against them, but I think it's a really good pickup, good young player, limited ice time. I don't think I see him getting very much ice time, if I'm honest, but time will tell.
Interesting comment from Sizz there. Davey thinks that Duggan's been picked up just to make sure nobody else does.
Well, I'm sure when, you know, the interview with Sam himself, he said things weren't quite working out for him in North America. he either got in touch with Killer or Killer got in touch with him a few weeks ago, and they've been talking. I would have imagined if most of the coaches around the league knew Sam Duggan was available, that had been after him, it shows the pull that Cardiff have at the minute, that they can bring someone of his quality, and he's done well at GB level. I think he'll continue, and that's probably something that he's looking at as well as the end of this season, and obviously the World Championships, and can he get himself into that GB squad? And he's going to have a much better chance of doing it, I would imagine, if he's playing in front of the GB coaches week in, week out, as opposed to playing in one of the more junior leagues in North America there. So play to him, he started very well. The comments that have been on Twitter about him at the weekend say that he's had a couple of good performances in his first couple of games.
Speaking of the GB, two GB players are part of Tom Barrasso ringing the changes at the Sheffield Steelers. Brendan Brooks played on Saturday night for the Manchester Storm, having left the Sheffield Steelers. And I don't know whether you heard, guys, but Ben O'Connor is back in Sheffield after leaving Sweden, deemed to be, quote, the new Messiah.
Hadn't heard?
No, you hadn't heard? No, had you not? No. It was actually a big secret, and they did very well to keep it under wraps. But most notably, just this morning, the Sheffield Steelers have signed a new import netminder. Who'd have thought that was going to happen? Matt Climey? I've no idea how to pronounce it. Anyway, he comes in from HC Innsbruck. He's a brief bit of NHL experience, quite a bit of AHL experience, and is a Spengler Cup winner. Davey, where does this leave Jackson Whistle?
As part of a goaltending tandem.
Really?
I'm not 100%. Bring somebody in at 35 with a lot of AHL and top European League experience, you would expect that, one, he'll be on at least the same money as Jackson Whistle's on, and two, he's going to want to be playing.
Yep.
I don't think that any goaltender can games and how quickly they come and these triple headers and stuff. We're doing really well. Get three games and three nights out of Besko and two weekends in a row. And, it's going to catch up with Besko as well. And we've got Stephen Murphy there to carry that load when Besko needs a night off. A lot of it is that Jackson Whistle's actually been one of Sheffield's better performers. Haven't seen too much of their games, to be quite frank with you. Usually, well, if they were playing them at Garnet, but the curtains, to be quite honest. But, it'll be interesting to see. He went to Sheffield with the promise of, I don't know if it was a full-time goalie coach, certainly, more goalie coaching, individual goalie coaching than he was perhaps getting in Belfast.
He got Tom Barrasso.
And then in comes, Tom Barrasso after that. And, he's fairly quickly identified, even though Jackson is allegedly even playing pretty well, that, that's something that they need. They need backup. So, is it a case of they're both going to be thrown in there and one is going to get the job, one is going to earn the job? But it certainly takes a load on him. Jackson Whistle's a young kid still. He's still not that long off that hip surgery. And, he's had to play a lot of hockey under a lot of pressure at the start of this season. So, something that's going to take the pressure off him. It can only be good for Jackson. I'm not too worried about the Sheffield Steelers, to be quite honest with you. But, you would imagine this guy's not coming here to sit and watch.
I don't think I think he's coming in here as a clear number one goalkeeper. It's Tom Brasso's come in, he's faced Shane Owen, he's faced Mike Garnett, he's faced Ben Bounds, and he's thought to himself, we need one of these guys. And with all fairness to Jackson Whistle, he's not one of those guys. Says, I see nothing except for this guy being a clear number one for the Sheffield Steelers. And anybody, I see a lot of Steelers fans coming out saying, no, this is going to be an ISL tandem where they'll both get equal ice time. I don't see that happening.
No, nor do I. He's 35. I think he's about 6'2", 6'3". He's a big boy. He's played a sprinkling of games in the NHL. And I was looking at the stats earlier on. Ray Sawada played with him in Texas, and I think it was 2010, and then Blair Riley had a couple of games with him again in San Antonio. So
the Bish played with him as well, I think.
Who?
The Bish.
Oh, did he? Okay. Looking at his stats from this season, he started it in, well, he played three games in Innsbruck, goals against average 6.17 and a save percentage of 0.768. Hopefully that's the same sort of form he's going to bring in to Sheffield. again, with the rumours flying around of what Jackson was offered and being paid in Sheffield, and Davey's just touched on there, you know, don't think this guy's coming in for any less. You know, you've got three goalies, with Brad Day there obviously being the third one, potentially paying him in the region of £100,000 a year between the three of them. Wow, there's a lot of money being flying about in Sheffield, and I don't think it's finished yet.
Be interesting going forward. A couple of interesting results. Dundee Stars, we'll talk about in a second, that last took an overtime win on the 100 millionth time of asking to beat the MK Lightning. The Flames, well, there's still cup qualifiers going on, unbelievably. The Flames went to Cardiff up against Tom Murdy and took a win. And also Sheffield took an overtime win against Nottingham with that, as I spoke earlier, a late equalising goal. So yeah, it's all going on in the Elite League this weekend, not just with people moving about in Dobbs, but a couple of interesting results. Okay, moving on. It's the Halloween special on Free Sports for the Game of the Week. So here's Murph to tell us more about that.
The live EIHL TV coverage continues with a Halloween edition Wednesday on Free Sports. Ben O'Connor has returned from Sweden to Sheffield, and with new head coach Tom Barrasso settling in behind the bench, the Steelers make their television debut for the 2018-19 season as they host Coventry. Danny Stewart's side have won three straight league games coming into Wednesday's road battle with EIHL victories over Manchester, Glasgow and Fife. So an interesting encounter awaits at Fly DSA Arena. Join Paul Eady, Chris Ellis, and myself, Aaron Murphy, from 7 p.m. Halloween night for the pregame show, and then the Blaze and Steelers face off live on Free Sports from 7:30 p.m. Check freesports.tv for all EIHL times and listings, and go to eliteleague.co.uk for all your EIHL game tickets and news.
Thanks to Murph. Belfast Giants this weekend have three games in three nights, all in Scotland. They go from one side of Scotland back and then over again. They start in Fife in Kirkcaldy and take on the Flyers on Friday night, 7:15 p.m. face off. I'd love to say there's a webcast. We've been promised two. We've been delivered none. So if you want to take a chance and see if there's a webcast, by all means, go for it. 7:15 p.m. on Friday night. Saturday, Glasgow Clan, 7 p.m. at the Shopping Centre. No webcast there. There's not even a hope of one. 7 p.m., Glasgow Clan. And then back over, there is a webcast. We'll face the Dundee Stars in Elite League competition Sunday at 6 p.m. And earlier on, Davey got to catch up with a very good friend of ours, head coach of the Dundee Stars, Omar Pasha. So in this spot, you were expecting to hear Omar Pasha, weren't you? Well, actually, it's not going to happen, or not today, at least. We were unable to use the recording, so Davey's going to redo it, and we're going to hear from him later in the week. So keep an eye on kingdomofthegiants.com, and we'll give you the interview on our SoundCloud account. Anyway, we're going to pass it back to me, where I'm going to thank Omar Pasha. When you haven't actually heard Omar Pasha, you've been listening to me. Will you hear this? Thanks to Pash, that game will have Stars TV webcast, a show that once featured one Simon Kitchen. Says three games in three nights in Scotland off the back of what was a tough weekend. This is just another one.
Again, you know, it don't come any easier. Hopefully they'll have a few bodies back this weekend. You know, it's, I know there's 3 or 4 days before they head back. Well, sorry, 3 days before they head to Fife, and It's not going to be easy. You know, they've had success against us this year already. We've beat them as well, but you know, they're sitting top of the league. They've had some good form. Shane Owens had a great season so far, but again, they're beatable. So you know, we'll concentrate in one game at a time. Let's get into Fife. Try and pick up the 2 points. Try and stay healthy, and that's important. I'm not sure which way the goalies are going to work this weekend for Adam. He's going to go with Besko, he's going to go with Murph, no idea as it sits, but hopefully we can, as I say, we can come out this weekend. I think if you, again, you know, look at the Scottish teams, you know, a lot of people think that they're a lot easier to beat than some other teams, but that's not the case. Not anymore. 3-3, always tough, trying to conserve energy. You know, hopefully we can get off to a good start against Fife and pick up 2 points Friday night. and then lead into the weekend against Glasgow and then Dundee.
Davey, 3-3 nights, but just looking at that first one just briefly, Shane Owen's been a bit of a conundrum, not just to us, but to a lot of the league.
Good goaltending right across across most of the leagues. Shane Owen has been exceptional in the games that we've faced him. You know, we have put an awful, and we just haven't really solved that riddle yet. A Fife for us has always been historically right back from the crossover. The crossover cup wins back there. Do you remember that? Roman Cavalier scoring the winner in the crossover cup final and doing the row the boat to centre ice. That'll be something that I remember for a long, long time. But right back from then, you know, it's a raucous wee barn to go into. They get a lot of, you know, the home support is worth a massive advantage to them there. And it's an old school barn. And we just have to get our heads wrapped around that. You know, the fans are going to be noisy. They're right behind the bench. They're imposing, and it's been a place where historically, as I said, you know, the results haven't been as good as perhaps in other places. We'll go on to Dundee, we're slightly better there, statistically through history, and the Clan, you just never really know what they're going to get. You know, the ability to turn it on some nights, it can be absolute dog. So it's just really, really hard what you're going to get there. It's going to be a hard road trip. As Simon says, goaltending's going to be talked about it there earlier as well. I think that I would imagine Besko will want to play all three games.
Yep.
He'll probably play the first one, see how he feels going into the second one. And similar thing, you know, if he feels good, if he hasn't, depends how hard he's worked. I can imagine Murph may well get some ice time in his homeland, but wouldn't be one bit worried about Stephen Murphy coming in between the pipes, one of the premier goaltenders still in this league.
Absolutely. Those three games, like I said, Friday, 7:15 p.m. in Kirkcaldy against the Fife Flyers. Webcast unknown. Saturday, 7 p.m. no webcast. Glasgow Clan at the Shopping Centre, and Sunday at the DIA, 6 p.m. against the Stars. More than likely, there'll be Stars TV webcast. But keep an eye on at AVFTB for details. Any other business, gentlemen?
I've got one.
Go on.
I think we're not going to sing it, but crap at singing.
Is this like the happy birthday section of the show now?
Well, I think that maybe if people want to tweet in, then we can give them a wee happy birthday shout-out. I don't think that would be a problem, but this one's a massive shout-out for a happy birthday. Young Blake, he's in hospital at the minute. I know he's not feeling too well. He was away over in Manchester and Nottingham. He's come back, and I think it's a lung infection that he has, so hopefully he's on the mend. I know the doctors and nurses at the hospital look after him, and we wish our thoughts are with him, and we hope he's going to be okay very soon. But he's a big 11 on Wednesday, so yeah. So it's a massive, massive happy birthday, man. I hope he's you know, healthy and ready to go again for this weekend, because you know, he was looking forward to a triple header trip for his birthday. So hopefully he's okay. All our thoughts are with him. And happy birthday, Blake.
Yeah, absolutely.
Happy birthday, soon champ. And I see Dylan had the pipes in again, laid up in the hospital with all sorts coming out of him. So hopefully he's, all these kids, all these guys that Dylan's sending me messages here asking for stats in the middle of the night. No, kid, you got to stay in bed, you know, give me a break.
I have to say, like, talk about the Belfast Giants being the road warriors. I went down to round to interview Adam Keefe after the game on Saturday, and straight round there was Blake and his mum,
yeah,
you know, making the effort to come over despite the fact not being in great shape, making the effort to come over to support the boys. And I know the lads, no doubt, are given a bit of a boost by that, because, you know, that's exactly what you want to see. A fella like that, a young lad like that, happy birthday to him, fighting his way to get to see his favourite team play and to see his favourite team take two overtime wins on the weekend. What better present is there? Happy birthday, Blake, from all of us here at A View from the Bridge. Davey, anything else?
I do. I've got two pieces, Patrick. First one, I have to publicly acknowledge the guys that helped me with the stats. I could not do it without it. I know that Adam Keefe appreciates it, and it was Steve Thornton really appreciates. Simon, I don't know how much, but he gets them sent to him anyway.
Joel Neal. Appreciate
Neil, honestly. Poppy, Harvey, who everyone knows here at A View from the Bridge, helps me out. Stevie Thompson, the Rain Man. Some of the stuff that guy puts together is unbelievable. But Phil Armstrong, Keelan Daly have came on this season. You know, they're modern face-off shots, all that stuff. And it takes a long time. It's a big commitment. What they give me, they allow me to put a package together to send to the club every week is absolutely first class. I'd be surprised if club in the league is getting the detail and the package that we're able to send. And we're just trying to give the club a point, something of a percentage advantage. You know, it's we're just doing it because we love this club. We're very fortunate to give us the access to the tapes and all they allow us to do that. And obviously that also helps us with the podcast that, you know, we'd be one of the podcasts that actually watch games. But the other thing that I would like to say is that obviously at the testimonial quiz last night, Stephen Murphy announced his he's obviously announced previous, but last night he was able to announce that Paxton Schulte will be joining him on the ice at the little clap.
Oh, a clap for Paxton Schulte.
There was a clap. Paxton Schulte is coming back to Belfast, and it's thanks to the good list bridge. All those people that bought bricks and Stephen Murphy have clubbed together, and we're going to bring Paxton back, and he's coming back for the testimonial. You know, we could have got Paxton back, and he would have came to the game with a heart and a half. He had signed everything going. He had an absolutely great time for us. But why not? Why not get a shirt on him? Why not get him back on the ice where he belongs, where he loves being? You think you're going to put a smile on Paxton's face coming to Belfast? Imagine the smile he's going to have on his face when he steps across that, you know, from the rubber mat on the ice again. It's going to be absolutely brilliant. Can't wait to see the big man, but can't wait to see him on the ice again.
What number is he going to wear?
He's not going to be on the same McCall. So I would say he'll get 27 down. Yeah. If he has to rip it off Kendall McCall, then that's what's going to have to happen.
Anybody
could
else?
Could we see 227s boxing centre ice? You just never know.
Anybody else announce that night, sis?
Yep, Craig Peacock. Craig Peacock's coming back to play in that game as well. You know, Peake spent, I think it was 5 seasons with Murph playing in Belfast, and he's playing with him at GB level as well. So I know he's not having an overly fantastic season again up in Glasgow. Long may that continue while he's not in a Belfast Giants uniform.
Yep.
So
all-time leading franchise power play.
Absolutely. You know, you tweeted out earlier on about young, he's not young anymore. Tom, what do you call him?
Carlin.
Tom Carlin. You know, once a Giant, always a Giant. So
literally once a Giant.
Literally once a Giant. And I did a digging earlier on. Good idea of when he played for the Giants. And I'm pretty sure it was at the very end of January 2003. Or, end of January 2004,
The first season of the league.
First season in the Elite League, Rob Stewart, head coach.
Yep.
I think it was an away game at Coventry.
Makes sense.
He was with the Telford Trojans, him and his mate Adam Biddle. They came down for one game. I actually texted Stewie before the podcast here and said, Stewie, a bit of a trivia question for you, but back in 2003, 2004, we had a couple of kids, Tom Carlin, Adam Biddle, that came and filled the bench for us, where I think Colin Ward was out injured at the time with a lot of suspensions. And I think that was after Ruff had got hurt against the Basingstoke Bison as well in the big Donnybrook.
Yep.
Jason Bowen, I think, was hurt as well. Yeah. Colin Ward was out. So these kids came in to help fill the bench up. And I said to Stu about it, and he said he couldn't remember. And I said, you were the coach? And he was like, you know, Belfast puts years on you, but you know, as you say, the guys came in same season. Grant Taylor as well, he came in and played a few games for us as well. But as he said, I see Tom has replied to us on Twitter there, saying literally his favorite hashtag ever. You know, once a Giant. But he was, and he goes down the stats. He actually sits 200th overall in terms of Giants on the all time leaderboard. So not far from the bottom, but
good luck to him in his retirement.
He's got his name on the board.
Yeah. Career highlight, no doubt.
His name's on the board and Cools, I'm sure of that. So
no doubt.
You know, fair play to him.
Absolutely. Right, we'll wrap it up there. Jensen, unless there's anything else. No?
You know what? Yeah, there is.
Okay.
I didn't get a chance to jump in there with Davey and get on about the work that his team do for stats. He does go on a bit like the.
Oh, here. Wait till you listen to the podcast here first.
Shut up, you wee dick.
I see. I like it. I like it. You don't.
You're yeah, no, I don't mind a bit. I will be listening.
That's one person.
The, your what's it, Shane?
All right, so, come on, Sage. Come on, we'll wrap it up. I got stuff to do.
He keeps on. He's the one who keeps on trying to get it over in an hour. I was just going to say a massive thank you to Davey's crew for doing all the stats. I do use them when I'm doing the podcast, or sorry, when I'm doing the webcast. But I, you know, a lot of people, when you're putting all this information together, I know for a fact that Adam pays particular attention to every single one of them that comes in, because it's on the back of the door. The guys get it when they're getting emailed about different situations that are happening, the coming upcoming games. He does all of that, and he uses all those stats to put onto an email for the guys and whoever they're playing that night for the stats on the doors as well. So it's Davey's 100% right. You know, all the information that the Poppy and Philip, Keelan, and obviously Phil the Rain Man, all the information they put, and Davey, obviously, don't forget Joel, but all the information that they put in and all the time that they put in is absolutely massive as volunteers of the Belfast Giants.
I think that's the word, volunteers. It just shows how much volunteers make this club go round and round and help to help. You know, the lads on the ice are the key part. They're the guys that bring us the entertainment. They're the guys that bring us the wins. But the volunteer aspect of the club is a major one. And a bit like ourselves and the stats guys and the guys that work at the actual rink and et cetera, et cetera. It's a real key part of the club. And long may it continue. Right, we'll wrap it up there. Thanks to Blair Riley, Adam Keefe, Omar Pasha and Aaron Murphy. The free sports game of the week is Steelers against the Coventry Blaze, 7 p.m. tonight. The three games this weekend, like I said, Fife, Clan and Dundee, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Webcasts probably for the Fife and the Dundee game. None for the Clan game. So keep an eye at AVF2B on Twitter. Try to keep you as much up to date with as much information as we possibly can. Thanks for everybody for their interaction on Twitter over the last couple of days. I know we had a lot of three-word weekends. I just haven't had a chance to go and fish through them and put them into the podcast. But thank you very much for all of those. Don't forget, you've got until Friday to cast your vote for the player of the month of October. That's between Tyler Brescarowani, Blair Riley, Josh Roach, and Dustin Johnner. Find us on Twitter at AVFTB, Facebook, just search for A View from the Bridge. And of course, there's a lot of stuff on kingdomofthegiants.com. There's soundcloud.com/AVFTB. We've got Instagram, we've got the works. So keep across our socials. David and Simon, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chance.
Pleasure as always, boys.
Wherever you are this weekend, we hope you enjoy yourself, enjoy your hockey, especially if you're off to Scotland to follow the Belfast Giants. And we'll catch you here next time on A View from the Bridge.
Podcast Network.